Since it's the beginning of the year, and like all of you, I too have resolutions, resolves, things that I want to pay more attention to in this, not just in this year, but the rest of my life. And one of the things that I don't think about very often at the beginning of the year as far as a resolution is patience. And I wanted to speak about patience, not just as imparting that to you, but to remind myself about that. As we all know, the human condition of that we live in this realm of existence is due to a lot of change. There's so many ups and downs, just the whole financial situation of our families, of our communities, of our nation, of the world. It's overwhelming sometimes. We can have a lot of helplessness, a lot of confusion. There can be misunderstanding a lot. We can experience a lot of impatience with those near us, with something bigger than that, you know, politicians, the government, etc. And it affects how we are with each other. I notice that in my own family and in my own community. I notice my heart closes down, it contracts. And so I looked over some of the experiences and readings I did about patience and put them together to offer to you tonight. A long time ago, I heard a story that piqued my interest about the virtue of patience. And it was during the time of the Buddha, when there weren't all the rules and regulations of conduct yet at that time. To protect the practice, to support a sense of safety so that one could open one's heart, train one's mind, there was only one rule during that time before the 227 rules of conduct were brought out bit by bit. And that was the rule of patience. The Buddha said, this is the most important virtue that we can experience, that we can nourish in our own hearts, so that everyone gets along, so that there's a sense of safety, so that there's a sense of ease, so that we can understand more deeply what it takes to be liberated and to be liberated. So until this very day, even though there are those 227 rules of the Vinaya or the Vinaya, however one pronounces it, there still is the most important one, which is patience. And the Buddha has this wonderful saying that I've heard many times from my own teachers when they have sensed some impatience from me because I want to kind of lean more ahead in my practice, or I'm not happy with where I am right now. They say the words, patience is the highest virtue, saying those words in Pali to me. Whenever my recent teacher, Sayadaw Upandita, I say recent, but he's been my teacher for 25 years now, whenever he's noticed that there was some wanting there or some dissatisfaction with how it was going, he would say the words in Pali, Kanti Paramam Tapotitika. He could see that even as I was walking in the door to give my report to him. And so I would hear those words chanted in Pali to me. So important is this patience in our practice, in our daily life. It can have huge influence over everything else that we do. Impatience also has a tremendous power, as we know. when we look at the opposite of what patience is, when we know and remember and have experienced what impatience is, how much trouble that causes in our lives, how much sadness and hurt it can cause others, how much contraction there is in our own hearts because of that. In Hawaii, there's a Chinese doctor. Actually, he used to have a column in the sports pages of the Honolulu Advertiser. I haven't seen him in the last years. But he used to say that a lot of the troubles we have with our health is because of time disease. He would call this time disease, this rushing, this putting a higher value to quantity rather than quality in our lives, causes stress, causes dis-ease, disease in the body and in the mind. After I heard that from him, my to-do list changed into to-do or not to-do, you know. So the not-to-do part was the part where I just crossed out that this really is not important, you know, this all these things that have to be done, and just taking the most important things. I'm really still working on that. I haven't perfected it, but I do live on Maui time, so I feel like I'm a little more relaxed, and it's great to live on an island like that where, for example, my husband Steve went to the post office to retrieve our mail, and he got some mail back that we had sent out. And it came back to us like 2 years later, you know. And I don't know what happened, but it seemed like some of the hang-up was in Honolulu. And and the postmaster said, that's the benefit of living on Maui. And he looked at it that way, you know, that it's just so slow like that. And we have really time to notice nature, to enjoy, to have a quality of life rather than trying to get so much in. This poem, or this grouping of words by Georgia O'Keeffe, that famous painter that painted those great big huge flowers, that saw into the heart and soul of nature that way, says it all when she said, still, in a way, nobody sees a flower. Really, it is so small, we haven't time. And to see takes time. Like to have a friend takes time. And that's what patience is all about. It's really seeing, taking time to really see deeply, to really befriend ourselves, to have that quality of heart that we're so longing for, that we're rushing around trying to get it from everything else. But it takes that time, that expanse of no time, and that patience to really befriend ourselves and then truly befriend others. We're in a hurry so much of the time. There's this kind of forward tilt. You know, a lot of our practice in whatever we do, whatever kind of system we use for the body, yoga or anything else, is coming into that balance where we're feeling really here. Meditation, opening the mind, training the mind is training it to be really, really here so that we can see deeply into the now, into what's happening in this moment. Most of the time that hurriedness is falling forward, tilting out of balance. And it doesn't feel good. You know, there's always some kind of false promise of something out there. And we miss the seeing the beauty of right here. There's a holistic strength about standing upright and really with our feet rooted in the ground and our minds and hearts really open and taking in whatever there is to take in our own minds and our own hearts and nature around us, when we're not reaching out and trying to get something that's not here. My friend, who is now 94, when she was 91, she said to me, "If we're not in the now, we're in the ow." It really hurts. It does when we look closely. It's painful. And a lot of our practice is being patient with the ow, you know, being patient with not being in the now. It's being patient with the painful places that are the result of that, the residue of that in our hearts. When we're really here, we notice how much more relaxed we are. And it takes a lot of that relaxation and at the same time the balance of alertness to be in the present moment. And I think we just have to keep learning that, no matter if we've been just started on our meditative path or we've been here on this path for 30 years. I'm still learning the balance because my body's changing, the aging of the body, the mind is changing. You know, it really is so forgetful. I think that's more letting go. Whenever my husband Steve says, "You forgot again," I say, "No, I'm just letting go more." It's true. A lot of things don't become so important. So being in this life requires the supreme virtue of patience. And if we could just remember the basics, you know, I think we'd be better off instead of, in the metta, loving kindness practices, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be peaceful. But sometimes just to go back to the very beginning and say, may I just be patient with how it is, that's a good thing to do. It is known and it's said from this knowing that wisdom can arise easily from a virtuous heart. And so I want to put patience in the context of these 10 virtues, these 10 paramis that the Buddha pointed out, and that all religious and people of faith leading to wholesome states of mind put these virtues out as something to really look at, something to nourish, something to practice. Patience is the last of these on a particular list that I have. So it's within this list of the 10 paramis, the 10 virtuous qualities. First is generosity. Then morality. Morality means living with a clear conscience of non-harming. Renunciation, energy, wisdom is the fifth one. Then we go to truthfulness, resolution, loving kindness, equanimity or balance. And the last one is patience. The Buddha said patience is the highest of these virtues because they are all needed, they're all required, they're all part of the actualization of the other qualities in order to actualize equanimity, for example. Equanimity requires a lot of patience, a lot of just resting in the spaciousness of the moment, in the balance of the moment, and letting in what needs to be let in. Loving kindness comes from a heart of patience. Resolution, that kind of balanced determination that has a long range view. Patience is needed for that. When we begin to notice what true patience is experientially, not just what the dictionary says or what we may have heard, you know, when our parents or elders have said, now be patient. And, you know, we just get white-knuckled and kind of hold back. That isn't the true experience of patience. It's not that, as my friend said today, it's not white-knuckling ourselves through life. It's more like a heart that has a genuine quality of caring for ourselves. It's that gentleness of caring for ourselves, because we know if we clamp down, it doesn't do our minds and hearts any good. And the residue of that can last in our bodies for a long, long time. Years, lifetimes can last in our bodies. And it's a deep caring for others, because when we're not patient, we hurt others. When we let things go out of our mouths or through our actions or our non-action, our holding back, it's very, very hurtful to others. There's a strength that we feel from patience. It's a gentleness, but it's a strength of a long enduring heart and mind that's able to see beyond that moment, to have an endurance. I remember reading in the suttas recently, when one of the maybe almost fully enlightened monks or nuns, but maybe even fully enlightened, came to the Buddha and was enduring some blame from the community or something like that, some misfortune, and was simply telling the Buddha. And the Buddha said, endure it, it will pass. You know, just sometimes just acting on something right away and just not waiting, just wait, that kind of gentle waiting of endurance can do a lot more than needing to say or do something in the moment. So it's this gentle strength, this patience. When we can bring conscious intention and attention to that quality, we can really get far in life. You know, that we're able to endure into the long of our lives, and we can look back and we're able to say more and more, I did the right thing, or I did the best I could, with less and less regret. It's said that with patience there's a cultivation of that soil. It makes the soil for liberation more fertile. We plant the seeds of patience and they bear fruit in the right time. Cultivating patience and all these paramis I mentioned is really serious Dharma work. Sometimes we may think that just sitting on the cushion is the real work, but I know in this community, with the loving guidance of Rodney Smith, who's been a wonderful colleague and friend to me and many others and to all of you, that the idea of practicing in the world is really important. And the cultivation, the serious cultivation of all of these paramis that I mentioned, in particular patience that nourishes all of the others, is strong work, is potent work. In Asian countries, the practice template is like this. With the people who can, you know, who have the means to, they take a couple of months of intensive training, one or two, sometimes three, but usually I hear that it's 2 months of intensive training in monasteries that accept lay people. There aren't a whole lot of monasteries like that, but I usually go to one of them every year. And then doing that intensive work is part of their practice, but another equally important part is doing their practice at home. And when they do their practice at home, they're usually, what I hear from the Burmese people, they're usually practicing one of those paramis. I was just there in November practicing during that time. And the woman whose family I stay with, she actually has she has an inn. And it's wonderful to be with that Burmese family. It's not like being in a hotel. And she does go to intensive practice 2 months a year at least. And the rest of the time, she's at home doing her practice. And so this last time I asked her what her practice was during the days at home. And she said that she was practicing more generosity and that she was doing her best to give in more ways, that when she sees an opportunity to give in any way, that she would give spontaneously sometimes. And for a long time, I know she's been practicing generosity. One of the beauties of going to her home is that every morning around 6:15, 6:20, the monks from the local monastery come around. That's the monastery that my lineage is connected to, with Upandita, Sayadaw Upandita. And they come on alms round, and it's one of the most beautiful sights in my life that I can see, have seen. They come around the corner in their orange robes and very, very serene, the kind of epitome of that serenity and that deep patience for liberation. And they come around to the houses in that area. And one of the joyous things that I do in the day is I go out in the morning and offer food to them along with the lady of the house. And so they come by, and she has had food cooked in the morning, and rice and certain curries. And then we, as the custom goes, we remove our shoes and stand barefoot, and they come one by one, and we offer them with all our hearts whatever food that there is. And I watch her while she's doing this, and she has great joy to be able to give every day, to be able to give food for these people who are doing their work in the world. That's their job. That's what they do. They bring the balance of this deep peace in themselves and for the world. So we're not to underestimate the power of this deep work, whatever we're doing, paying attention to one of these paramis, and especially this parami of patience. We have seen in our own practice, and when we see others in practice, that when a yogi or spiritual aspirant is practicing and opens to the Dhamma, or the Dhamma opens in that person's heart, the kind of the connection between the two happen. The realization of the Dhamma happens in a yogi's heart. And it happens very quickly. The teachers, the Sayadaws, and I have seen that the paramis in that person, the cultivation of all of those qualities, generosity, equanimity, loving-kindness, resolution, energy, patience, all of those paramis are very powerful already in that person's heart. So opening to the truth, opening to the Dhamma, realizing the truth that's there in all of our hearts happens very quickly and can happen easily. So the power is very, very strong in these paramis. Often when going home from retreat, our own teachers would advise us, practice the paramis, don't forget them. So this supreme virtue of patience, We live in this world of constant uncertainty. And the thing about this suffering that arises is because we want certainty. We want things to be like this and not like this. And if we spent more of our time realizing that actually this body, this mind, this world, the bodies and minds of other people in this world around us, it is all uncertain. We don't really know what's happening, what's going to happen in the next moment. If we spent more time being patient with that, I'm speaking to myself, then it would be a lot easier to open to the truth. The first noble truth of the Buddha is the truth of suffering. One of the ways of suffering is that not accepting the fact that we live in this world of uncertainty. This is this realm that we live in. Praise and blame, gain and loss, slander and honor, pain and pleasure, these are rampant. There's no place you can go where there's a lack of this. It's all around us in our personal lives, especially in this last election year that we've all been through. We've seen a lot of that. No matter how wonderful the person is, no matter what, you know, party you were supporting, no matter how wonderful that person is, there was always praise and blame. There was always gain and loss when you watched the polls day by day. Slander and honor, pleasure and pain was so close to us. We need patience on two basic levels at least. And so this is just noticing my own experience about needing to practice more patience. By the way, you know me as Kamala. But my given name is Paciencia. That's the name my mother gave me. Probably because maybe she could foresee my world, you know. But this is all of our worlds. I mean, mine is no different than any of yours. We have different stories about praise and blame and gain and loss. But really, it all boils down to the same. So in relation to the outer conditions or the outer situation, we need a lot of patience. Just looking on that level, we need so much patience. Many of you have children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, little ones in our lives, you know, that we've had close interaction with. Or if you're a mother, it's a lifetime of interaction. Partners, colleagues. I mean, even in the Dharma, there's lots of drama. You know, if you only knew the drama and the Dharma. I mean, sometimes I say, no wonder, you know, I'm having to learn all these lessons from the Buddha and from my teachers, because I have to. There's high drama sometimes. And of course, there's a lot more understanding, but sometimes because people think that you're going to understand more, it's like they lay it on there more, you know. So we need a lot of patience for the outer conditions. We need patience in saying, for example, I would say, this is how it is in your life right now. With my four children, they're all grown children, and knock on wood, all is well right now. But there have been many times when it hasn't been in balance or that I can sleep well at night. And it could be that way tomorrow with my four grown children, any one of them. And I have five grandchildren now. And so it's not easy, you know, thinking about what are the lives they're going to have to, the conditions they're going to have to live in. And sometimes when I see one of my grandchildren having a fit of anger, and it goes on and on and on, and I'm the one babysitting. You know, it takes a lot of patience and a lot other things, compassion, equanimity, resolution to get through this, you know, and when's his mom going to come home, all of that. But just being able to say, okay, this is how it is with him right now, you know, that kind of equanimity that is patience. And then there is the inner feeling. Sometimes we say, okay, I've got patience with this outer condition, but then we end up, you know, secretly saying to ourselves, why couldn't I be more or less angry? Why couldn't I be more loving? And we notice that place in our hearts that isn't so wholesome, that there's some bitterness or rancor or something, and we realize later, maybe we don't realize that we haven't had patience with ourselves, that level. And we're trying so hard to be patient with this whole situation, big or small, in our lives, but we haven't realized that we need more patience with how it's all unfolding in ourselves. Manindra used to tell me, this is the law. This is how it is. The law means the natural unfolding of the Dharma. And he used to tell me so much, this is the law. This is how it is. This is how it's unfolding right now. So it's that learning how to accept not just the outer conditions, but patience is learning to accept the inner condition, how it's going on inside of us, and relaxing around that, you know, because we really, there might be something that we can incline the heart and mind to, just thinking about, okay, being more patient with myself. Maybe that helps. Just having a thought about that. Or just saying, okay, let me just relax around this a little bit more. It's okay. A lot of my self-talk is, it's okay. It's okay. Just like I'd say to the kids when they were babies. So just take the common example that we all have had of praise and blame. I've seen a lot of it during this year of election, see a lot of it in my own life, closer to home. There was some recent blame concerning something that I and my husband Steve had nothing at all to do with. Not directly, not indirectly, never heard of it except when the blame came. You know, it was just kind of malicious rumor. We had nothing to do with it. And yet it was something that was going around among, it seems like, not a whole lot of people really, but we still had to deal with it. And I had to deal with the situation, and I had to deal with my own heart, the feeling of like confusion and hurt and like, how could they say this? You know, I thought they knew us better than that. Or how could they say this because they're in the Dharma? You know, kind of like judgmental, and just watching my own mind do that, it was clear to me that I needed to be patient with the outer condition because it will pass, and also the inner conditions of my heart, and coming down to the basic thing of, I can deal with this, we can deal with this, we can handle this. And so it is. The heart could become clear enough, could become big enough to say, this too is part of life. We don't have to blame back. We can clarify. We can do what we can and then let it take its course. It took the activation of not just the practice of patience, but the activation of many other paramis to deal with that. But patience brought it in. Brought in compassion for the whole situation, for others, for ourselves, brought in the resolution to see it through whenever we were again, not feed it, but when confronted with it again, just deal with it, handle it. Took energy to do that. Some nights of like thinking about how to handle this and not sleeping because of worry or guilt, because there was none of that, but just feeling like up at night, early in the morning, looking at what needed to be done. So now, looking back and saying, okay, with that, I feel like I did the right thing, not having any reason to have remorse or regret. So that's what patience, a lot of what patience brings is the absence of remorse, the absence of regret. And this has huge implications in our life. It has huge implications in our practice, on the cushion. It allows us to sit on our cushion and open our hearts and train our minds without that hindrance of restlessness of the body, restlessness of the mind. One of the full meaning of the Pali word that we just hear as restlessness is restlessness and worry. You know, worry is one of them. Worry, remorse sometimes comes into the description of that. So even in the Buddha's time, I found a piece adapted from the Dhammapada. There are stories in the Dhammapada that are the stories behind where the lines come from, and certain Dhammapada lines. And this one has to do with praise and blame, pain and pleasure, those lines in the Dhammapada. So this is a story about one time when the Buddha was staying in the town of Kosambi. In this town there was one who resented him and who bribed wicked men to circulate false stories about him. Under these circumstances, it was difficult for his disciples to get sufficient food from their alms rounds, and there was much abuse. Ananda, the attendant of the Buddha, said to him, "We'd better not stay here. There are other better towns to go to. We'd better leave this town." And the Blessed One replied, "Suppose the next town is like this. What shall we do then?" And so he said, the Ananda said, "Then we move to another town." And the Blessed One again said, "No, Ananda, there will be no end in this way. We had better remain here and bear the abuse patiently until it ceases and then move to another place. There are profit and loss, slander and honor, praise and blame, pain and pleasure in this world. The enlightened one is not controlled by these external things. They will cease as quickly as they come." So I found this in order to give this talk to you, and I thought, okay, it happened in the Buddha's time. I'm me, a lowly, earthling, unenlightened being. You know, it's okay. So, how is the feeling of patience when we feel it truly in our hearts? It's not weak. It sometimes feels weak, but it's actually very strong, this feeling of patience. In the West, we think that patience is inactive. It's a weak force. But according to the Dalai Lama, His Holiness, he says, "When it is said that one should be patient and withstand trouble, that doesn't mean that one should be defeated or overcome. The very purpose of engaging in the practice of patience is to become stronger in the mind and the heart. And also you want to remain calm. In that atmosphere of calm, you can develop wisdom. If you lose patience, if your mind flounders by emotions, then you're lost. You've lost the power to see clearly. But if you are patient from a basis of altruism, then you don't have to lose strength of mind. You gain strength of mind. And your mind becomes calm." So this leads the way for the right action, of course. So the strong qualities are, it's like a gentle flowing strength of a river that just keeps flowing, that enduring kind of strength. We feel that in our hearts when something happens and there's a block, we flow around it, or we flow over it, or like water, we flow under it. It doesn't mean that we dam up our energy like the white knuckling. It means that it keeps moving, and in the keeping on of moving, it even gathers strength. Patience manifests as non-opposition. This is in the Abhidhamma, the Buddhist psychology. So in the flowing strength, you see when it reaches some opposition, it flows around it. It doesn't let it stop the strength of patience in our hearts. It moves on gently. Or sometimes it's rapidly, but it moves on. An interviewer once asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama about his apparent lack of anger and obvious patience towards the situation in his country of Tibet. And this interviewer said something like, "Your land has been taken, your resources have been gravely taken, people have been hurt." And His Holiness replied, "Yes, they have taken all this. Should I let them take my mind as well?" When I read that at the time, it was like, yeah, patience enables an intelligent response to life. Impatience is like a thief. It takes away our inner resources. This bit of wisdom comes from my daughter, who was 13 at the time. And when I first started this talk, which was years ago, and it's changed since then, I said, "What is patience to you, and what's impatience?" And she wrote down this list. And one of the things she wrote about impatience is she said, "Impatience is like a thief." She learned a lot by the little assignment I gave her, just noticing what goes on in her own heart. And that's what we do with the practice. We notice about patience, about impatience. We learn about ourselves. So patience as a gentle flowing strength. Patience as an intelligent response. Impatience as toppling us forward. Feeling of wanting it to be different. Pushing away, not wanting something. Grasping and pulling at, wanting something to be in a different way, striving in an imbalanced way, not settled within. We feel that imbalance when we're not patient. We tend to try to pull our petals open, you know, the petals that of our hearts that are unfolding in a natural way. We tend to pull them open too fast. I remember telling someone very close to me one time, wanting that person to open more quickly. And he said to me, "You're pulling my petals open. And that it's not natural." And it really, I learned a lot from that response. I found this on a tea box, and it's a writing from the Findhorn Garden. "Flowers unfold slowly and gently, bit by bit, in the sunshine, and a heart too must never be pushed or driven, but unfold in its own perfect timing to reveal its true wonder and beauty." But when we're striving, when we're trying too hard, or we're practicing too hard, or we're trying to work double time, it just doesn't work. Suzuki Roshi said, "It is when your practice is rather greedy that you become discouraged with it." And we don't feel like we're doing the right thing, but we don't know what to do. And maybe what to do is just to be patient, to settle back, to relax. One time I went to Manindra with a lot of frustration, and because of physical suffering, because of mental suffering. And Manindra could get, he was very gentle with me most of the time, but he could get very, like, the sword of wisdom could come out and say it very strongly to me. And one time I remember when I went to him with this physical hurt in the body, the mental experience that was very hard to endure, he said, on account of your lack of patience, this is why your practice is this way. And not enough patience with everything, not just being gentle and soft with myself. Again, this is from the sports page of the Honolulu Advertiser a long time ago. A young boy traveled across Japan to a school of a famous martial artist. When he arrived at the dojo, he was given an audience by the teacher, the sensei. "What do you wish from me?" the master asked. "I wish to be your student and become the finest karateka in the land," the boy replied. "How long must I study?" 10 years at least," the master answered. "What if I study twice as hard as all your students?" 20 years," replied the master. 20 years. "What if I practice day and night with all my effort?" 30 years," was the master's reply. "How is it that each time I say I will work harder, you tell me that it will take longer?" the boy asked. "The answer is clear. When one eye is fixed upon your destination, there is only one eye left with which to find the way." Not fully present, you know, reaching out, imbalanced, or pushing away because we don't like it, how it's happening then. So balance, constancy, gentle flowing strength, clarity of mind can come from all that. There's also the quality of flexibility. There's a strength in that too. Where I live on Maui, there's wonderful elders all around, and we have from every area. There's Japanese, there's Filipino, there's Native Hawaiian, of course. There's a newly growing African American community. I love to see all this. There's no such thing as political correctness in Hawaii. It's a loving thing to kid each other about how we are in our cultural heritage. Across the street from me, when I lived in this little town, Hali'i Maile, there were these Japanese elders, and there was some talk about earthquake on Maui or the Big Island or someplace else. And these Japanese elders across the street said to me, "You know, when there's an earthquake, and they say in Japan, where these people came from, if you have fear that the earth is going to split apart, you go to a bamboo grove, because the roots are so strong that the earth doesn't come apart." And she said that because and the husband was nearby because we had a bamboo grove in our backyard. And you also see with the bamboo, there's this great flexibility. That's a strength in the times. We have this very high bamboo that's 20, 30 feet high or more. And it's this green striped bamboo. And during storms, the top of the bamboo, when there's windstorms, would come down and touch the ground. But when the wind was gone, it would be right back upright. And that's the flexibility of the mind and heart that comes with the beauty of patience. So we have balance and flexibility, gentle flowing strength. Just the ability to know what to do in the moment, to have the focus, to have spaciousness, whatever needs to be done. This daughter, Therese, our daughter, my husband and I, she helped raise him, but I knew he really loved me when he came into my life when she was 13. And she dropped us off one time at the shopping center when she first got her license to drive, and she was 16. And she knew us both, of course, me and her stepfather very well then. Steve, if some of you know him, my husband Steve Armstrong, he's a, I would say, extremely focused. I'm not exaggerating. Would you say? You know. He just knows what to do most of the time. But when he goes for something, he really goes for it. And he's not so distracted at all. It is the hell realm to go shopping with him. When she was dropping us off at the shopping center, you know, we were both getting presents for people in the family. And I imagine that it's the hell realm for him to go shopping with me, because he would ask me, "Now, Kamala, what is your aim?" You know, and I'd say, "What? My aim? I don't know what my... I just see something nice, you know, for that person, and that's it connects, and okay, I'll buy it, you know, and get it for that person." And so, just that's not me. I don't have, like, that kind of a thing. And so we got out of the car. We're at the shopping center. Teresa's driving, and she drops us off in front of Macy's. And she says, "Now, Dad, you float. Now, Mom, you focus." You know, and so... Well, okay, I don't know if I was so successful that time looking back. But it just... This kind of open balance of the mind, this ability to let it in and say, "What do I need to do now?" This kind of knowing what kind of balance you need in the moment for yourself, for the other person. All of these are strengths in the Dharma, in our hearts. So patience is absolutely transformative. It's just like the bedrock of our Dharma life, our life in the world, which is, for many of us, our Dharma life, just as strongly as sitting on the cushion is. It's really the foundation of everything else. You could say it. You could say that for many qualities, but patience is something in this great time of change when we're opening to a new administration. The financial situation is the way it is. The cultural situation is greatly changing. We really need to look a lot more at flexibility, at balance, at softening our own hearts, as seeing more clearly. All of this takes patience. It said, a Chinese proverb says, "Patience is power. With time and patience, the mulberry leaf becomes silk." So may that be so for all of us in our lives as a whole, in our long, enduring lives, in our practice, in the moment, at home, with our children, with our family. May that be so. So thank you for your kind attention to the Dharma. And we have time now, I think. Let's take a little time for some, if you have some comments or questions. I can't answer everything I want to say right now. but I might have some reflections on what you say. And so if you have anything about that particular area, patience, any questions? And it's a time now for some of you, if you need to go to the restroom, go ahead and then just come back and I'll just keep going with this, and then we'll sit the last 15 minutes or so. Stand up if you like. You know, we can do this informally. Any answers. If you don't have any questions, you can give us the answers. Yeah. So the comment in question has to do with finding the balance between sitting with what is versus leaning into. Well, a lot depends on so many conditions. And the most important condition is where your heart is at the moment. You know, when you really can sense that you feel clear enough, balanced enough, you feel that there's enough compassion in your heart to take that action. And it actually could be in the next moment. It doesn't have to be like you've got to have patience for a day, you know, or an hour. You might really feel in that moment you've gained enough clarity, you've gained enough inner balance to act upon what you need to say what you need to say, to do what you need to do. And sometimes, you just a short inner reflection will tell you, no, wait. It's better to wait. And I would really trust that. You know, a lot of what I've learned in just watching my own heart and mind is knowing the difference between a deep set pattern and thinking that I'm doing something right, you know. Because oftentimes we act on something, say, no, I'm ready to do this now, but it's out of a deeply set pattern of aversion or attachment to how we think things should be done. So I think a lot of our understanding has to first come from, is this one of the patterns that's playing out? And then wait and let it play out. Because it can play out in our heart and then, you know, nobody has to be affected by the word or the action. And then take some action. So it doesn't mean inaction. You know, I think you all get that. It doesn't mean inaction at all. Lack of action or lack of strength. A lot of strength can come even when in the words and in our stance about things. You know, patience isn't like, oh, yeah, you know, we can. Sometimes it's just really strong. You're just leading with your heart and you're saying, this is malicious rumor. And just really being straight about it, you know, and not and feeling strong in yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you comment on the relationship, if you see one, between patience and perseverance?
The relationship between patience and perseverance? They're so alike, aren't they?
Yeah.
Persevering has a connotation of that long enduring mind. More like enduring. So many of these are related, interrelated. When I think of using the word or feeling the feeling of perseverance, it's like, when my kids were teenagers. You know, that as differentiated from when I needed to have patience with a particular situation that they were going through. So to me, it more has to do with that enduring, that time period. Do you have a sense?
No, I'm puzzling through it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking of it because of the kind of sense of going through when there's a lot of difficulty and persevering. We don't talk about persevering in happiness. Talk about persevering in difficult times.
Yeah.
And as opposed to patience could be, it doesn't necessarily have to be difficult.
Patience doesn't necessarily have to be difficult. Yeah, that's true.
So that's what I think in terms of perseverance, so it's like a little bit, one of the ways it might be different from patience.
But if... That's true, and I just want to say, if we just stay with the word, the word, and try to figure out the word, that's one thing. And sometimes we need to do that, but it's a whole other thing to just say, "What's happening to my heart?" Sometimes there's no word for it, you know, and you can't say that this is patience, impatience, or not perseverance, or this is patience, this is perseverance. I mean, sometimes a lot of things that happen in my heart, because I come from a lineage where you do noting, mental labeling, and for a lot that goes on, I don't have a word. And sometimes in order to just notice it, I'll just go, like, okay, got it. You know, that's the way the heart feels at that moment. And probably... as far as helping us, that would be better to do, just coming to the actual experience in the body, in the mind of that experience, and softening, and then doing what we can to soften around it, to, you know, the simple things of just breathing into it. The simple counting. You know Pablo Neruda's poem, "Now we'll count to 12. I don't think I brought that, but I almost did. And just letting, allowing time for it to settle. Allowing time for things to settle. Because they do, and then they get riled up again, and then they settle. But doing our action and our words in the most settling times, not the riled up times. Yeah.
A question about when I practice patience, I find myself waiting more than sort of an active heart connection with allowing things to be as it is. My question is, how can you become more connected to the heart when you're practicing patience instead of just this energy of waiting until whatever happens is gone, passed?
That's a good remark and good question, sure. You will notice, I think all of us have had this experience, that there's kind of a peak moment of confusion, there's a peaking of it, and there's where the contraction is most contracted, or where the fire is most hot. And so we're not waiting for like hours. We might be waiting for a few moments for that to settle. And, you know, if you feel like you need to get more connected with the heart, I'm glad you brought this up, then if you understand or know how to do any kind of loving kindness practice, intentionally inclining the heart there. You know, maybe you need to connect with your own heart or the heart of another. Then, subsequent to those moments of just waiting, then doing that practice. Or sometimes it's a practice of equanimity. Some of you have done the equanimity practice, and you know that that needs to be done. So it could take a little reflection on your part, a short reflection. What do I need to do in order to... proceed with this, and make a decision. Just look at your own mind and heart, and make a decision, and then do that. So, practice doesn't just have to do with being mindful. You know, mindfulness is not enough. We really have to examine, investigate, reflect, make an intention, follow on that intention, and do it. Maybe the reflection has to do with doing more metta practice in the moment or for longer periods of time, more equanimity practice, more compassion practice. Yeah. So that action can be taken there too. Yeah. Uh-huh.
In myself, when I'm feeling impatient, I'm either not breathing or I'm breathing fast.
Uh-huh.
When I'm more patient, it's a more easy flow.
Uh-huh. That's a wonderful way to look at it, and a wonderful experience I think that all of us have as human beings with bodies. So watching out for that, because sometimes we'll notice the body before we notice that we're actually being impatient. What's going on in the mind. So noticing what's going on with the breath. That's excellent. Thank you. How many of you feel that you are really patient? Oh. Good. We have a couple. Three. How many of you feel that you're fairly patient? Good. I mean, we're just getting a reality check that most of us are, you know. We're not alone. And how many of you feel like you need to practice more patience? Yeah. So, yes. Kind of like
gravity.
Uh-huh. So patience seems like gravity. Uh-huh.
And there's just so much strength in that. And so the gravity is just like this amazing anchor. And for me, the patience kind of being centered in that and being connected with that. It's just that whatever's going on, there's always this sense of, the space in between, the stillness, but it's really solid.
Solid. It's so, it feels like gravity, like solidness, like firmness to you.
And the wind blows, everything happens,
yeah.
Going on. It's like, not that I'm always feeling that, but that's kind of...
When you sense it, that's what it feels like. Yeah. Any others have your experience of patience? Yeah.
In the rare moments.
In the rare moments.
I've truly been patient, not waiting, not tapping my foot, and still trying to get something to pass. You know, when
yes. Uh huh.
It feels like freedom.
It feels like freedom.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the really letting go into.
Letting go into. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Great examples of patience. When patience is there, there is an absence of greed and of hatred. And it said that when the wholesome... There are 25 beautiful states of mind, it said in the Abhidhamma. Of course, we could probably have a lot more if we sussed it out. But when one of them is there, all of the others come near. And when they are all there nearby, then it repels or keeps at bay the unwholesome states of mind. So that freedom feels very nearby. And that is freedom. Freedom from, yeah, the unwholesome states. I'm sure others have patience examples. Oh, good. Feeling of impatience.
Right now, and it's interesting that this is the topic tonight, because feeling in my chest that I haven't been able to name it. I've been trying to figure it out, and it feels more like restlessness and very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind doesn't feel restless. It's my
Yeah. Right. So that's a good question. So how to dispel impatience when it's felt? You're feeling it. You think that's what it is here. It's a restlessness. Yeah. So how to work with that when you've been trying to go back to the breath and it's still there? Well, it's to be with that very experience and to name that. You know, maybe try just naming it and being with it. A lot of our practice, is not about getting back to the breath all the time. It's really about being mindful with whatever is the most predominant experience. So it might be, I'm not sure, but you can see, it might be that you're trying to get back to the breath, but that's there, you know, and there's this impatience just about that. It might be just the heart beating fast, that's all it is, or whatever is going on in the body at that time. But be with that. Be with that experience as long as it's there, you know, just gently touching it with mindfulness, with knowing this is what it is. Feeling it. Take if this is the experience and this is mindfulness, rub the attention on it gently, not like pushing it away to get back to the breath. Rub the attention on it. Really feel it gently. And then you'll see more deeply into that experience. One of the things that is seen, mindfulness doesn't see it. It just brings the attention to it and mirrors it. But wisdom, there is another quality of mind, which is wisdom. And wisdom sees that experience in the deepest possible way as impermanent. It starts to see through it. There's kind of like, it's not solid anymore. And that gives a lot of relief in a way. It begins to see that experience as not me, not mine, not who I am. The kind of not self experience of that. And a lot of what we suffer from is identification with experiences that are happening in the body, experiences that are happening in the mind. But if the attention can be brought close enough, not pushing it away, but just close enough so that it really feels the experience and mirrors the experience, then when mindfulness is really strong, then wisdom comes in. Wisdom is another one of the beautiful qualities. And it's wisdom that sees this is anicca, this is impermanent, this is anatta, this is not self, this is dukkha. There's no lasting satisfaction anywhere. Not trying to get someplace else if that's, you know, unpleasant, or if that's pleasant, not trying to hold on to it. So that's why I say mindfulness is not enough. There has to be enough continuity of mindfulness in order for the wisdom factor to come in to give that kind of freedom. So staying with that, it's not about coming back to the breath. It's about knowing what's in that moment. And to know what's in that moment, we sometimes have to say, okay, what's predominant now? What's the most clear thing happening? I think that's good for the talking for now. And I'd like to be able, I know you all have busy lives and there's so much happening, and part of my joy is helping us all have the gift of a little quiet and stillness and the support of a group. So let's sit for a little bit.